May it please the court, Michael Cohn representing the appellant Hook, who is appealing from Judge Lefkoe's order that required him to submit to DNA extraction. The appellant Hook is, at the time, was 68 years old and was convicted of a business crime in 1998. As a condition of his supervised release, the judge indicated that he would be subjected possibly to the probation officers coming into his house, and if the probation officer saw anything of an illegal nature, Hook was subjected to being prosecuted or having his supervised release terminated. That was the extent to which Hook had knowledge of or thought that anything of that nature could happen. So his expectation of privacy with reference to the government taking the position that he had to subject himself to these unreasonable searches is he was entitled to this expectation of privacy. Now, to quote a jurist that I just heard a minute ago, when we're talking about can someone say with a straight face, can the government say with a straight face that this law dealt with a non-law enforcement issue? It's clear that the whole reason behind the law is law enforcement, and if it is, then the Fourth Amendment should apply to Hook. You don't have to get into the area of certain needs or an analysis of cases which basically held that you can circumvent the Fourth Amendment if, in fact, it deals with issues of safety or public concern, stopping people at roadblocks to ascertain if people are driving drunk, or the cases dealing with having students, athletes, submit to taking some tests.
Of course, the paradox is that these DNA, data banks they collect might actually help someone like Hook. Right? DNA has exonerated a lot of accused people.
Well, that it has, but as we've indicated, Judge, that the finest law enforcement agency in the country is the FBI. It's all sent to the FBI, and in fact, at a footnote on page...
What does that have to do with anything?
What it has to do is that the whole idea of taking the DNA is a law enforcement issue.
They want to get the right person. So if your client were accused of something, and there were DNA evidence that exonerated him, it would benefit him, right?
Sure.
Well,
but that
so why is there a legitimate regulatory interest in having as much information about criminals as possible, because might actually help them, since
not as far
felons are natural targets of law enforcement. So
not as far as a 68-year-old white collar criminal. So as applied to Hook, there are serious constitutional
issues. You have to have a general rule, don't you?
Well, the general rule comes in contradiction to the court's order in 1998 that set forth the conditions.
That order didn't exempt him from some general rule that might be applied to all people in some particular class, right?
Well, I don't necessarily agree with that, Your Honor. I mean, what right does the government have to...
If some general rule were passed that all felons, all people who've been convicted, have to, provide DNA for some DNA data bank, he couldn't claim exemption on the basis that he had a supervised release order.
Well, he's claiming an exemption because he was convicted 6 years prior to the enactment of this law. So
you're not following me. If the government enacts a general regulatory law, the fact that someone subject to that law had a supervised release order, that would not exempt him from the law.
Well, I don't have a problem with that, because then judges in the future could make as a condition of supervised release that you submit.
In the past, they can say all felons have to register, some such regulatory measure. We've done with sex criminals. If they did that, that would apply to your client as well as anybody else.
I don't know if it would apply to my client, because it would be in violation of the ex post facto. Well, it's increasing his punishment.
But penal laws can't be applied retroactively, but regulatory laws can, as many cases hold that undermine your position.
I believe we're in the penal context, are we not, in this situation? If Hook does not submit, then he's going to lose his supervised release period of time, and he's going to jail. I don't know what's... It seems to me that in that context, I don't have a dispute with your general proposition, but in the context of this case, I do.
And really, in terms of your argument, that's really what it boils down to, because in terms of your Fourth Amendment argument, almost every state or federal court who've addressed this issue find there's no Fourth Amendment violation to require DNA.
I'm not sure that
tests,
that's
or
true.
Blood tests rough. Being taken. Well, many, many circuits have found.
No question
right.
about
so,
that.
So, I mean, you're just saying it can't be imposed after the fact, after he's already been placed on supervised release. That's what it really boils down to.
Yes.
We'd have to agree with you that this somehow this DNA Act is penal in nature.
It's
and
adding,
not regulatory.
Correct. It's adding to his punishment.
Correct, Your Honor. I guess you're also saying is, had he already been released as a prior felon, they couldn't do this, right?
That's correct. What they're basically doing is adding the conditions to which Judge Mim made at the time of his conviction in 1998. What's to stop them in the future to say, well, instead of...
Do you believe the DNA Identification Act is unconstitutional?
As applied to Hook? Absolutely.
No, as applied to any... As applied to everybody.
Well, I don't have a...
Look, do you understand what the Act... The Act requires authorized the FBI to create an index of DNA collected from individuals convicted of crimes... So the entire population subject to it is the criminal population. Now, isn't the logic of your argument that all those people, since they were convicted and punished, they're now being punished anew by having to give up their, DNA?
Well, Hook is being punished.
What's special about Hook compared to anybody else who committed a crime in the past before the DNA Act was enacted?
Because he's under supervised
what
release.
What difference does it make? What difference does it make?
Change the supervised
Suppose
release.
Suppose someone was sentenced to 10 years in prison many years ago. So, and now the government comes along and says, well, we're not satisfied with that because we're making all you criminals give us a DNA sample. Now, why wouldn't that be just as ex post facto as what is being done to Hook?
That would be ex post facto.
Then the statute is unconstitutional.
That's right.
I don't think you argued that, did you?
Well, that's the point. I was more intent on Hook rather than the whole world.
There's no logic
well,
to
someone,
that.
Someone can raise... Someone who, after the act is passed... I don't have a problem with it. But before the act was passed, I don't think it should apply to Hook.
Let's get at it a different way.
Sure.
You keep saying it's not that it is penal in nature. So how do you get around, for example, the Johnson case where the D.C. Circuit specifically held that the DNA Act is not penal in nature because its purpose is to aid the government in identification of felons, resolution of crimes, and exoneration of the innocent? So you're running head against a case that is totally opposite from what you're trying to persuade us to do. How do you get around that and have any other courts held that it's penal?
Our position is that anything that adds to the conviction is penal. In other words, He got 7 years.
But all I'm saying is courts have held that the act is not penal in nature. So how do you get around that characterization and give us a reason to say that it is penal in nature? You know, how do we get around the language in that case?
I don't know if that case dealt with someone on supervised release.
But why should there really be a distinction between supervised release and probation?
Because there are provisions with reference to...
What if his supervised release had expired, and then they asked him for the DNA? Is that okay?
I would think not.
What if he had never been placed on supervised release,
and
they asked him for DNA?
If he was placed on probation, there are different rules that...
He wasn't placed on it. He just sent to prison. Now he's released. And they ask him for DNA, and they invoke the act.
If it's in conflict with the judge's sentence...
Well, it's certainly in addition. All the judge did was sentence him to prison. Now they come along and ask for his DNA.
Well, they sentence him to 3 years of supervised release in addition.
Look, would you listen?
Yes.
Suppose he just sentenced him to prison, no supervised release. After he's released from prison, the government comes along and says, "We want your DNA." Now, is that an ex post facto law?
Yes.
So the supervised release is a total irrelevance. The only thing that matters to you, the logic of your argument, is that the crime was committed before the DNA Act was passed. Right?
Well, that and the legislature is coming along amending the judge's sentence. Adding to it.
Doesn't matter what the sentence was. Ex post facto law has... He could have been sentenced to 2 days in prison, right? 30 years ago. And they come along, they want his DNA. Isn't the logic of your argument is that that makes the DNA law ex post facto?
Yes.
So supervised release is irrelevant.
Well, it's not as far as one's expectation of privacy.
It's completely irrelevant.
Okay,
thank you, Mr. Cohen. Mr. Bindi?
Good morning. May it please the court. As Judge Williams pointed out, the DNA Act has been upheld against Fourth Amendment challenges by every circuit court to have considered the issue. It's been upheld as applied to prisoners, to supervised releasees, and to probationers. The defendant has given no reason for this court to reconsider its holding in the Green case, rejecting a Fourth Amendment challenge to application of the Act. There are a rash of other arguments, constitutional arguments, that are made that are fully addressed by the district court and in the government's brief. The ex post facto argument obviously is wrong because the act is not punitive in nature. There is a heavy emphasis in the defendant's brief and argument here today on some sort of contract theory that the conditions of supervised release when the sentence is originally imposed are frozen as if in amber and unchangeable and immutable. But, of course, that's wrong. And so for these reasons, we would respectfully request that the court affirm the judgment.
I have one question. Doesn't Rule 32 typically require a hearing with a right to counsel before there's a modification of supervised release?
That's
and
true.
If there is, and was the appellant given an opportunity here, or given notice, or was there some hearing when this condition was changed?
There was, yeah, he was notified by the probation officer that he was required to provide a DNA sample. And when he objected and didn't show up at the meeting to provide the sample, there was a rule to show cause that issued by supervised release should not be revoked. And there was a hearing on that. As a matter of fact, conducted over a period of several days.
Right. But initially, do you agree that the procedure that should be followed is that you're saying that just notice from the probation officer that this is required is sufficient because that is notification of a change.
Yeah. Yes. Well, it's technically speaking, the judge did not actually modify the conditions of supervised release. Maybe she did so in kind of a roundabout way, But what the actual theory below was that with the enactment of this DNA statute and with criminal penalties for refusing to provide a sample, mm-hmm. if you're subject to it, the defendant's refusal to provide a sample would be the commission of a crime, and that itself would violate a standard condition of supervised release. And so that was the basis for the rule to show cause.
I have a question, a couple, actually. If someone is on supervised release and they refuse to do that, they can have the supervised release rescinded? Is that...
It would be grounds for revocation, yes.
Revocation, okay. And if someone is in prison and refuses, what do they do?
Well, again, the Act contains penalty provisions for refusal to submit. I don't know of any case law regarding a refusal that would require overcoming physical resistance to mm-hmm. extraction.
And and Judge Posner's question about someone who is out of prison, the way the thing reads, any former felon, is that
the way the statute reads? I read the statute to say that even a former felon who is no longer under any criminal justice supervision or restraint is still subject to the Act.
And what happens to him or her if she doesn't?
Can be prosecuted for refusal.
And that would be a what? Crime?
Yeah.
Is there any basis to distinguish between the privacy rights of individuals on parole and probation versus those on supervised release?
Not for this purpose, Your Honor. There are different restrictions that people are subject to, whether they're on probation or parole or supervised release. I think people under a sentence of probation may have a greater expectation of privacy than someone under who has been paroled or is on supervised release. But again, the DNA Act has been upheld by various circuits under all three situations, prisoners, supervised releasees, probationers, people subject to some sort of conditional release. So for purposes of this particular statute, I don't think it makes any difference.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Binion. Thank you, Mr. Cullen. Now your time had expired. Your time has expired.
30 seconds?
Okay.
30 seconds,
sure.
Judge, the government, the government keeps citing Green. Green dealt with people in jail. People in jail don't have any constitutional rights.
Well, that's not true, of course. But
pardon me?
That's not true. They do have constitutional rights.
Well, they don't have any with reference to, they give up all their rights with reference to the Fourth Amendment argument.
Okay. Thank you.